Starting last week, I decided what I'm going to do to launch into the new year is look at an old truth. And I think I'm going to take a few weeks to do that. We looked at it last week. I'm going to do it again this morning. And so the old truth for the new year is pretty simple. I'm sure all of us have heard it. There's a lot of things challenging us in today's world, whether we still believe it. But the Bible hasn't changed on it, so I'm just going to proclaim it again. Here it is, real simple. There is a God, and there is a devil. And we're just kind of looking at where Paul makes that very clear in chapter 6 of his letter to the Ephesians. I'm just going to read a few verses of that, beginning in verse 10. We read this last week, and I'm just going to review it again, and then we'll take it apart a little more this morning. In the New American, it's translated this way. Paul writes, "Finally, be strong in the Lord and in the strength of His might. Put on the full armor of God so that you will be able to stand firm against the schemes of the devil. For our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but against the rulers, against the powers, against the world forces of this darkness, against the spiritual forces of wickedness in the heavenly places. Therefore, take up the full armor of God, so that you will be able to resist in the evil day, and having done everything, to stand firm." Well, last week we kind of recognized the fact that, at least even in the Western world maybe, that this old truth is not only considered maybe outdated, but by a lot of people, obsolete. In fact, many would say the opposite of this scripture is what they really believe. Paul says we don't wrestle against flesh and blood. There's something else going on. Many in the world today would say we only wrestle against flesh and blood. Your problem is purely psychological. A child wasn't raised right, and there's certainly validity to that. Or it's biological. They just need medicine. Not to say that that's not true either, but Paul warns us that if that's all we believe there is, then we have an inadequate paradigm for dealing with how the reality of how this world really works and how your life is really operating. The fact of the matter is that there's plenty of places in the world where this is still no problem. It's a concept that's accepted. I mean, Frankie's not here this morning. Most of us know Frankie Leonetti, a missionary from our church to India. You ask him if the general populace of India has any problem with the concept that this world is multidimensional, that there's another spiritual realm, an unseen realm that has an impact on flesh and blood people. They would say, of course, they don't have any problem. You talk to a lot of people in Africa, I think you'll find the same thing. Certainly in Latin America, which I found out when I went on a mini missions trip. I know like 10 years ago when Brandon and Tara went on their mini missions trip to Honduras, they were kind of bugged out by some of the stuff they saw in a church when they were there. It's a real thing. They don't have any problem with it. So maybe in a certain way, maybe our more highly educated Americans who also tend to pride themselves on being so multicultural need to understand that maybe they're being a little culturally narrow, but not considering the fact that maybe these other parts of the world have wisdom too, you know, and not looking down on them as though somehow, you know, they're ignorant and over superstitious. Maybe they got it right on this one. Actually, when Paul says our struggle is not against flesh and blood, I think I've said this before, he didn't mean that we don't wrestle in flesh and blood at all. Just because he says our struggle is not with flesh and blood, he obviously struggled with evil in flesh and blood form all the time. I mean, the guy was whipped, he was imprisoned, he was persecuted. So if you really look at his life and you read all of his letters, what Paul really would mean is that we don't just wrestle only with flesh and blood. There's both realms, and often flesh and blood participates as influenced by an unseen realm, something that we can't see. He's very clear about it, and in fact, he's really serious about it. Look at the way he talks about it. Against the rulers, against the powers, against the forces of this world's darkness, against the forces of spiritual wickedness in high places. Basically, Paul is saying, listen, if what I'm saying is true, and it is, you won't be able to stand up against this thing or understand it on your own. It's over your heads. And it's beyond you, and unless God is helping you. And God obviously wants to help us. He wouldn't put stuff this like this in here if he wasn't interested in warning us, and not just warning us, but helping us. So the two things I'm going to look at this morning is not real stuff that you haven't thought about, but I think we want to look at it. It's good to just remind ourselves and look at it again. What is it that we're against? What is against us, rather? What's coming against us? And who's there to help us? What's coming against us and who's there to help us? First, what is it that's against us? Paul says that there are schemes of the devil. Be strong in the Lord and the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God that you may be able to stand against the schemes of the devil. That Greek word I mentioned last week is methodia. It means that where we get our word method, he had methods. There's other translations say strategies and tricks. The King James says the wiles of the devil. That's kind of a word I wasn't too familiar with. I don't really use that too often. So I looked it up and it was kind of insightful. Here's what the dictionary says. It's a cunning behavior intended to persuade somebody to do something, especially in the form of insincere charm or flattery. Charm and flattery are some of his schemes. You know what that means? He's got a serious arsenal. He's got a whole portfolio. And I think that this is one of the most important things that we need to understand. So I'm actually going to spend more time on this, on what it is that we deal with, and then we'll finish up briefly on who's there to help us. Because here's the problem, I think. Lots of times when we narrow it down to there's a God and there's a devil, we have this error of making it way more simplistic than it should be. We just want to paint everything totally black or everything totally white. You know, it's either got a good hat or it's got a bad hat. And this part of the passage, I think, completely undermines that, because he says there's schemes, there's methods, there's all these techniques and ways that he comes about it, and it can be a mixed bag, and you're not always sure. And, I mean, that's the whole thing, that he wouldn't be recognizable. That's what Paul said, that sometimes he comes as an angel of light. It removes the possibility that this thing is so simplistic, that it's just going to be black or white. See, Americans, I think we have a hard time believing it's the devil unless somebody's head is doing a 360 and they're turning green and vomiting, you know? Then it's like, oh yeah, well, yeah, maybe that's the devil, you know? But the thing is that we consider the possibility that there are ways in which he comes in and we're not even aware of it. Wouldn't that be the most successful way of doing it? And there are two avenues that I want to look at. How he enters, how he finds access into our lives. One is success, and one is excess. Because it's often the successes, the good things in our lives, that often give entrance to his schemes. And then we'll look at excess, because it's when we sometimes are a little excessive. We can be over-spiritual or under-spiritual about the whole thing, finding a balance. So first of all, successes. He's going to use the least likely areas. Wouldn't that make sense to get to you? He's hidden. He's deceitful. Right from the beginning, the Bible shows that his evil never comes pure. In Genesis 3, right from the get-go, when Satan is first implied or referred to, he's referred to as the serpent, the kind of terminology that goes along with him that describes him is crafty. Some translations use cunning or subtle. Remember, chapter 3, it says the serpent was more subtle or crafty than any of the other beasts in the garden. The evil never comes just openly. Evil never comes to you obviously. It's never simple. It's intertwined. It's kind of hidden. It's multi-layered. It's complicated. C.S. Lewis says this, "Don't you understand there's no such thing as pure evil?" And if that's all there was, it'd be a piece of cake. There's no such thing as pure evil. If you don't, if you took everything good away from Satan, if you took away his creativity, he says, if you took his rationality away, every good thing, there'd actually be nothing left. What he's saying is evil never comes pure. It's never obvious. You know why? Because evil is always most devastating to your soul when it looks like something else. It's most devastating to your soul when it looks like something else. In fact, the sin that's probably most destroying you, we don't know about. People maybe have even tried to talk to us about it. Maybe it was your friends, maybe your spouse, maybe your parents, depending on your age, and we just get defensive and try and blame somebody else or say, you don't really understand, you know, you're making way too big of a deal about this. But the thing is Paul says, this thing is close. It may be around your throat. Our struggle is not against flesh and blood, but many agree that the King James, in this sense, in this particular scripture, maybe got it more right, because they don't say, it doesn't translate it, our struggle is against flesh and blood, is not against flesh and blood. It says, we wrestle not against flesh and blood. It uses the term wrestle. In other words, this thing is close. It's not some long distance battle where you're shooting an arrow, you know, 100 yards over the enemy lines. This is when it gets down to the point where you're actually with the weapons have been dropped and you're hand to hand wrestling with somebody, and it's a life or death struggle. Paul chooses to use that metaphor that it's that close. It's that important. Yet even though it's around your throat, we can't see it lots of times. The evil that will most destroy us or get to our soul, lots of times we don't wake up until it's the last minute. You wrestle with it, and that means evil is, again, it's complex. There's always another side. There's always another story. There's always another explanation. And that's why things like success, I think, are a good disguise. It's a scheme. Actually, the devil is probably more attracted to good things than he is to bad things. Let's face it, man. When things are going south and it's getting bad, that's when you get on your knees. That's when you start asking God for help. Well, when the things that you want start going your way, that's when you start getting this feeling of self-sufficiency, and he can just kind of weave his way into the thing. Think about how many people, when you've even heard these rags-to-riches stories, you know, when you see somebody that's striven to make it in the music industry or make it in show business, you see them and they're accepting their award finally. You know, they finally got the Grammy, and it's like, I thank God. You know, that, and it is, it's a wonderful thing to make. But then you watch their personal life just spiral down. Especially some of these kid stars. Disaster. Miley Cyrus, Justin Bieber, just a disaster. I'll never forget a quote I read a few years back. And whenever, you know, when you got to do this every week, man, you see something good, you write it down, you know? So I wrote it down. The devil's most effective plan is he grants your deepest wish and you get it. And then he laughs because you realize it's not it. It's not what you really need. And you want to kill yourself. That's his schemes, his point of entrance, his access. Sometimes it's the good things. It's the recognition. It's the status. It's when you get the influence, the more you get the things you want. When you get your promotion and you move up. When you get the family you want. You know, when I give those vows at the wedding and you have, you know, for better, for worse, sicker, and in hell, sick and sickness and in hell. But there's that one that says for richer or poorer. And I always think, you know what? Richer is can be much more devastating sometimes if we don't watch out for the schemes than poor can be. I remember a successful actor who was dealing with prosperity says, you know what? For every one person that can deal with prosperity, I'll give you 100 who could deal with adversity. Because adversity so often brings people to their knees, man, but prosperity, it's a whole nother thing. Evil forces are attracted to those things like magnets, almost like moss to the flame. To good things, influence, and power. The higher you go, the more there will be evil forces, subtle ways to. And that what he does is he comes in there and he uses it to control you, to rule us. You know, the devil, you know, he never comes and he says, you know what? You're going to make it in this career. You're going to work so hard that you're going to alienate yourself from your wife and your kids and they're going to leave you. He's not going to say that. You know, the enemy never comes into a situation and says, you know what, let's do some murder. Let's do some rape or some robbery. The devil comes and he stands behind your good things or your successes and he's going to use them to take you down. And the more you get the things your heart desires, the more the devil is working to control you through the good things. Whatever it is, your desire for romance, he uses it to take you down. Your desire for a good career, your desire for retirement, our desire for comfort and convenience, and he takes it and he changes it into a ruler over us. That's the complexity of evil, and it's important that we understand that it's a major avenue for the schemes and the wiles, his methods. He has so many avenues he comes in. You know, we think it's a physiological problem. We think we've got physical problems, but often he uses the physical problems as a means of entrance to bring in his spiritual warfare. I mean, certainly, I've seen so many people over the last 18 years that just get so open to depression when you're wiped out physically. See, it's complex. It's not just physical problem and you throw medicine at it, though sometimes that helps. But there's a whole other realm that takes advantage of these things, uses them for access, finds points of interest. Sometimes it is our successes, but the other thing to watch out for is our excesses. The devil's scheme of excess. He wants to keep your attitude imbalanced about the whole thing also concerning these spiritual matters. Tape Letters, I think, is one of the most insightful books. Not that I've read that many on this kind of stuff, but that's got to be one of the most insightful books there is. Just a conversation of how perhaps the devil might be talking to his cohorts to get entrance ways and accesses into a particular person. But right at the beginning of this book, I was telling somebody the other day, the scary thing is as you get older, I first of all, with movies, I only need about a dozen movies, because once I've watched the 12th one, I can go back to the first one. I don't remember a thing about it anymore. It's like I never watched it, you know? But what's the same thing is happening with books now. You know, I busted out a book. I was like, I never got to read this thing. I started reading it. I got things highlighted and underlined in it. Like, geez, I don't remember even doing this, you know? It's scary. And I started reading the Screwtape Letters. I think I've read it at least two or three times. I didn't remember half the stuff I'm reading, even just in the introduction. The second sentence of the entire book in the introduction, Lewis says this: there are two equal and opposite errors to which our human race can fall into when it comes to the devils. One is to disbelieve in their existence completely. The other is to believe and to feel an excessive and unhealthy interest in them. They themselves are equally pleased at both errors. The devil loves it when we get excessive either way. We get off balance. In other words, don't underestimate the devil, but don't overestimate the devil. His schemes take advantage of either one. I mentioned this last week. I think sometimes Christians get to the other extreme. It's like, you know, well, they've got the spirit of jealousy, a spirit of bitterness. They got a spirit of unforgiveness, a spirit of lust. You got a spirit of anxiety and a spirit of anger. Everything's a spirit. Well, what about the psychological factors? Maybe the kid just had a bad upbringing and he's got a propensity to just lose his temper or get angry. Maybe it's a destructive relationship that created an inordinate insecurity and jealousy. On the other hand, rather than having an overbelief on the matter, you can have an underbelief on the matter. Rationalize everything and not consider any spiritual influence whatsoever. They just give up on the whole thing completely. The devil loves both, and each creates a point of entry in his schemes and his tactics. Either excess is an inadequate paradigm for us to deal with the reality of what's going on. There are psychological problems. There are real biological problems. Your surroundings and your experience, they have a real impact and sometimes damaging effects on us. Well, isn't that caused by the devil, though? I mean, Jesus said the devil comes but to steal, kill, and destroy, right? It's the same old story again. I mean, we go through this lots of times in the men's group. We come to these things. Well, is it psychological? Isn't that real? But isn't the devil real? Well, why do we, you know, let's don't do black and white. It's not either or. It's both and. Often, I think the psychological damage from past experiences create access for the devil's schemes lots of times. It creates vulnerabilities for a point of interest. I think I've used this one before, but it kind of fits here, so I'm just going to use it again. When I was in college, which happens to a lot of kids, I just completely, you know, fell head over heels over a particular girl. And this girl had grown up in a deep psychologically and relationally damaged environment. Her mom was a really nice lady, but she was kind of like that Samaritan woman. She literally had been married four times, and she really was living with the fifth man at the time I was dating her daughter. Now, to think that that somehow isn't psychologically or relationally going to impact her daughter in some way is, you know, we're kind of kidding ourselves. But what do I know at 18, 19 years old? And she didn't have the capability of having a monogamous relationship. And I would constantly find out how she was with somebody else, even people who I thought were my friends. And it was incredibly, I mean, I have to tell you, most of us have gone through things like that. The pain and just the bondage that it puts you in. And then and it makes an entranceway, I think, for the enemy to even come in where you have this emotional a bondage where you can't even seem to break it, even though you need to break it. Then you get paranoid about the entire opposite sex, and you think there's nobody that... I mean, you usually hear this maybe from the other end, but I'll tell you, as a guy, I literally thought you couldn't trust any women. And I couldn't blame them because all the guys are after them. You know, they weren't after me, so it's easy for me to be faithful, you know. But the guys all chase the women, so how are they supposed to? So I just figured, man, I'm not doing this anymore. It's too painful, but I still couldn't bring myself to the strength to get out of it. And I really wasn't on a journey yet to knowing the Lord better, but I'll tell you what, I learned. Realm and beginning to pray and feeling that grasp, that bondage begin to loosen. And I started to feel a little bit of a strength to get out of this thing. And you know how music affects all of us, but maybe even more so when you're younger. There's different hit songs at the time, and you relate to them and so forth. Well, not exactly at this time, but around that time, there was a song out, and I think I've mentioned this before too, but I always remember it. Lou Rawls. Remember Lou? You'll never find another love like mine. That was his. You'll never find another love like mine. And I was like, yeah, you know, what am I doing in this? Is she going to sing that song to me? You'll never find another love like mine. I'd be like, I certainly hope not, man. That's the whole reason I need to get out of this. I never want to find another one like this. You know, but obviously there was a lot of stuff messed up in me that I'm even in this thing. But it's an entrance way. It's a damaged point where the devil takes advantage and his schemes can come in, and it creates a point of entry. 5 years later, you know, I'm walking with the Lord. I'm doing so much better. And then I actually start dating Tina at that time. But I still got all this damage. You know, the devil can take advantage of it. It's not just psychological. I believe there's another realm that can come in and just, like, you know, toy with that thing. He knows that damage part that's in there. And we were going out, I don't know, wasn't that long, and I was in Lynbrook at the time. I'm leaving work, and I see her car parked in front of a bar. Man, I was, oh no. I'm not going in there, man. You know, that's all I need is go in there and see her, you know, talking to some guy. Really? I was thinking this. And I didn't even go in. I couldn't deal with it. I was a mess. I saw her that night, and I finally got up the guts. I felt kind of embarrassed, but I was a disaster. I says, listen, was that your car? I saw it parked in front of whatever. And she starts busting out laughing, you know. This shows how old I am, right? There was a Woolworths next to there. They aren't even in business anymore, are they? She was in the Woolworths next to there. But we prayed, and God began to heal, and I realized, you know what? There really are women that are trustworthy, you know? But the devil, he loves to play on that. See, what the devil does is he plays what's already in you. He plays what's already in you. That's what the devil does. See, the devil doesn't make a good person a bad person. What he does is he takes a flawed person, because that's all he has to work with, and he makes them a lot worse. He knows how to play you. The devil plays what's already in you. He aggravates it through lies. See, temptation isn't about all the stuff that's laying around me. Temptation is about the stuff that's in me. That's why it becomes so effective at times. It's right inside of me. And he starts playing me. You know, but I got healed of that problem. And of course, what the deal is, once you get healed of that, then I found a whole list of other ones to take its place. He doesn't give up. That's why it's a daily thing. Yeah, that's in a one-time thing. This is every day. That's not a bad place to start. Just get up and say, you know what? Be strong in the Lord today. In the power of his might. I'm not going to tell you, I'm not going to pull this off on my own. Point being, we need to be aware of the spiritual dynamics in every area of our life. The good ones, the bad ones, the successful ones. Because unawareness is a sure recipe for success, for his access and entrance into our lives. So that's what we're up against. I'm just going to take a minute just to remind us who will help us. Again, Paul answers immediately when he says, be strong in the Lord and in the power of his might. Put on the whole armor of God. See, we got the Lord and God already mentioned. That you will be able to stand. Put on the armor. Look at the, did you notice the order there? First, you have to stand strong in the Lord. Then you can put on the armor. You can't put on the armor and then stand strong in the Lord. Because you know what? The armor is going to look ridiculous if you don't stand strong in the Lord. If you don't know the Lord, it's going to be like, what? What did you say, Pastor Greg? Oh, we're going to take the sword of the Spirit, are we? You know, what are you going to be on a Star Wars episode or something? You know, it sounds ridiculous. Unless you know the Lord and you get strong in the Lord. That's what I led last week. Paul said the same thing. Look, it's going to be ridiculous if you don't have your own experience, if your own awakening with God, it's going to be ridiculous. 1 Corinthians 2:14, the man without the Spirit does not accept the things that come from the Spirit of God. Sounds like a sci-fi episode. That's what he's basically saying. They're foolishness to him. And he cannot understand them because they are spiritually discerned. The only one who is strong in the Lord, who's been awakened, his spirit's been quickened, then he can realize that, you know what? My best is not going to cut it. My carnal ingenuity is not going to cut it. None of this stuff is going to cut it because it's a spiritual battle. And guess what? Spiritual battles have to be fought in a spiritual manner. That's just the way it is. The difficulty of the problem is not just moral, though that's important. The difficulty of the problem is not just education, though that's important. But it's not going to totally solve the problem. You've got an inadequate paradigm for dealing with the full reality. I've got to be connected to something beyond my own human resources and carnal ingenuity. There's got to be a conscious understanding of the power of the Lord in his might that's available to us. I think that's one way you just get your strength. Just take the word out and meditate on it. You know, the Old Testament says that the name of the Lord is a strong tower. That's who he is. That's what his name is. He's strong. It represents him and who he is and what he is. So the first thing Paul says to the Ephesians is that you've got to realize the greatness of his strength. That's a great thing to remember, the power of his might. Paul does that even earlier, just a couple chapters earlier in the same letter here to the Ephesians. He says, now to him, I love this. And we know this is how he ends his prayer. He reminds himself at the end of the prayer who he now is closing his conversation with and now who he's walking in. Now to him who is able to do far more. Not just far more, but far more abundantly. Not just far more abundantly, but far more abundantly beyond. And you think that's enough? No. Far more abundantly beyond all. You think that's enough? No. Far more abundantly beyond all that we can ask or even think of according to the power that works. And he's not done yet. Inside of you. Within you. That'd be one thing if all of that was the power that works from heaven. He says, it's in you. It's available. Take advantage of it. Walk in it. You just meditate on that one for a while. It's going to remind you of yourself. What's available to us? The power. Look at the Gospels, the way Jesus, I mean, the demons were like, they were nervous. All he was doing was walking around near them. And they were begging him to just take it easy on them. You know, he didn't have to have some like 4-hour exorcism, you know, or a two-day prayer deliverance conference. All he had to do is walk near them and they were trembling. And remember the guy in the Gadarenes? Actually, Matthew, I thought it was kind of interesting. He said it was two guys. Two guys possessed in the tombs. But Mark and Luke only talk about one of the two guys. Maybe he was the one who was really out there. He's cutting himself and everything. And Jesus just walked by him and the demons, that it says demons, were in him talking, saying, you know, have mercy on us. Take it easy. You know, don't just toss us into the great abyss. If anything, how about those pigs over there? And Jesus, again, wasn't any long prayer. Matthew says all he said was, G-O, that's it. Go. And that was it. They went and inhabited these pigs. Matthew wrote it down. He was probably an eyewitness. That had to be wild stuff. And Luke records that it was somewhere around 2,000 of them. The demon said their name was Legion, so it said there were many of them. Took 2,000 pigs, jumped off the bank of the river, and drowned in the river. Man, that's a lot of deviled ham. I know, yeah. You know I couldn't just pass that one up. That's unbelievable, you know? Wow. You know, and today we want to get delivered. What do you do? I mean, there's people that will actually take a fee to pray for you to be delivered. You know, they'll take a fee, like hire an exorcist, you know? And of course, you know what happens if you don't pay them. You get repossessed. All right, that's enough of the stupidity. All right, we're going to go back. Listen, the point of the matter is that Jesus was so strong. He was casting out demons and all this stuff. But in Luke 4, check this out. He's not just dealing with the demons. He's dealing with the devil himself. What it says? It's not like he's dealing with his emissaries or his other cohorts or whatever. It's the devil himself. His powers and authorities. And I guess the devil just knew this was a huge problem. He's going to have to deal with it himself. And he did. He went to the situation and he tempted him for 40 days and 40 nights, it says, in the wilderness. And he was utterly and entirely defeated. Leaving is kind of have to wait for another season. But he completely failed. In spite of all his efforts, he failed to tempt them. Paul says, listen, I want you to know something. This isn't just a story for you to better understand the person and nature of Jesus Christ, though it is. But I want you to put it to practical use and take up this stuff and walk in it, put it into practical action. He defeated him, therefore, you be strong in the Lord. Don't just read the stories, but now you take it up and you be strong in the Lord in the power of his might. You put on the full armor of God that you'll be able to stand against all these schemes. And here's the last thing I want to say. Notice, and he says it twice. He doesn't say so that you might be able to stand. He says so that you will be able to stand. You expect success. You will be able to stand. Let's pray.